We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan newsletter.
Into right center, back of the warning track, the wall. It is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Happy to have Joe Sheehan as our regular Tuesday 10 a.m. baseball guest here to talk about stuff and things as the Cubs have a sun-splashed debut at home that goes the right way for a change. Joe Sheehan of Sports Illustrated and Baseball America is on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. And he joins us now on the Al Pamati Ford Hotline, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Joe, hello.
Hey, Dan. Everybody's happy, right? The Cubs are scoring 7 runs a game. Fans have to be thrilled with this open, right? If I understand Chicago correctly?
Absolutely thrilled.
Yes, you know,
nailed
this,
it, Joe.
You know this city well. You're all over it. Everything is absolutely fine. And then, of course, we end up with the injury to John Lester, finding out more today. But you focused on Yu Darvish, and on what this third start means, and I didn't feel real good after reading what you wrote. I guess I don't deserve to, do I?
Yeah, I used to be the small sample police. You know, you got to wait until May to really make evaluations. But you know, one of the things we have now with all this access to data, the inputs of data, how hard a guy is throwing, how much his breaking ball is breaking, what pitches he's using, I think you can really make conclusions on a much smaller sample than we used to be able to. And I look ahead at the third start that's coming up for a lot of guys this week, whether it's Sale or Kluber or, as you mentioned, Darvish. So far, it's been an absolute disaster. He only made 8 starts last year, so there's still a big question about what he is. In his first 2 starts so far, his velocity is down almost 2 miles per hour from last year. Can't find the plate. He's walked 10 guys. Struck out just 6. So you kind of look and say, you know, what is Darvish? What is any pitcher? And that third start to me, I think, is important. So when he goes out to the mound tomorrow against the Pirates, it's, hey, you know, well, you got to figure out, is this guy actually going to be the 2/3 starter we thought he was going to be, or is he, again, a problem? Is he somebody that's going to maybe have to go back and, you know, do a rehab stint to get his command back together? So I think the pressure on tomorrow's start is only increased because of what we saw from Lester yesterday.
So if we've changed the Joe, are you all right? The sirens in the background.
Are you being chased?
Are you okay?
Oh, God. Okay, guys, I'm going to explain this because I have to explain this to everybody. I live between a fire station and a hospital.
Is it on purpose?
No, well, yeah, sort of. But, yeah, it happens all the time. We're gonna go through this.
Okay.
Half the Tuesday,
okay.
We're going to hear sirens.
All right. Just there we go. Glad to know. I got worried, thought wellness check maybe, just making sure. When we look at Darvish then and we see the velocities back in spring, like if we're changing what a small sample size is, are you able to, you know, from your perspective of an analyst, take the spring training stuff out of the way? I mean, he was throwing 96, 97 then. Does that matter to you at all?
Yeah, I tend to not look at the spring training numbers. Memories, and I don't know what measurements you were using. I know that the StatCast equipment is only available in one Arizona ballpark, the Salt River one.
Yeah, talking stick.
I want to say that. Yeah. So I'm not sure if you're giving me data that was collected possibly, you know, by people with radar guns at the ballpark. You know, but as far as the data that we have, it's either, you know, it's really just the one sample. And like I said, the command wasn't there in the spring.
Yeah,
we walked, I believe, it was 9 guys. And look, I know he had a really good minor league appearance, like a backfield appearance, right towards the end of spring training. There was a lot of happy talk about Darvish coming into opening day. And, you know, that's what I say, like, 2 starts, I mean, that's two appearances in 6 days, 2 appearances in 7 days. I'm willing to write that off. It's when you start to talk about the third one that I think we're going to see. So a lot of pressure on Darvish tomorrow. I think one of the other problems you have here is that the Cubs just don't have internal depth. And this has been an issue for them throughout this little run. They haven't been able – it seems like every team in baseball can generate, if nothing else, relievers, guys who can come up and give you 50, 60 innings out of the bullpen. Some teams generate starters, like, you know, the Rays seem to be able to always generate starters. The Cubs cannot. The Cubs have only gotten – and I just did the math. I got to forget. It's something like 40 total innings the last three seasons, 2017, 18, 19, from pitchers they actually drafted. If you look at the staff as it's currently comprised, there's nobody on the staff that they actually drafted. So there's just not a whole lot of internal depth. And I know Osley got hurt last year.
Yeah.
And that's one thing. And you know, you kind of, okay, you know, maybe Alec Mills comes up and does something. But, I mean, they don't have a lot of good options if the five guys they're counting on don't pitch well.
So let's get to the bullpen stuff and some of the depth that the Cubs do or don't have. You know, you look around baseball and you see the next guy coming up throwing 99 miles an hour and with a gif-able cutter that's just destroying people. Even the Mariners ended up with Edwin Diaz and the invention of moving him. But did the Cubs try zigging when others zagged and had a bad zig? Like, did they try some sort of organizational philosophy on how to assemble the bullpen depth that others weren't doing, thinking they could monopolize on something or find an area here? Is that in evidence?
You know, Connor, I'd like to be able to answer that question. I haven't looked enough at their drafting philosophies. I haven't looked enough at their drafting strategy. So I'm not going to BS you and tell you I have a great answer to that. But I will say that there aren't a whole lot of great power arms coming through this system. You know, a lot of it is failed starters, right? Oh, you know, we drafted a guy as a starter and it didn't work out, but, you know, he throws 96 if we put him in the bullpen and we can teach him half a breaking ball. And I'm just, I just don't know, looking at their drafts enough to say that they just haven't gotten those guys, or, you know, have they gone to the Kyle Hendricks model where they want to take command guys? I wish I could give you a good answer to that. I don't have one.
We talked to Jonah Carey at the end of last week after mm-hmm. Rob Arthur published what he did regarding these slippery baseballs, and the data's there. We saw it, that the drag coefficient is down again. Baseballs are slipping through the air. We're curious, and this was had to do with after Kyle Hendricks' start, where he was not getting movement on his sinker. He was not getting movement on his changeup with a downward rotation. What do we know about the slippery ball and its effect on pitches and not just batted balls?
Yeah, slippery is, I feel like you're talking about grip there. And what we're talking about here is drag, air resistance. Mm-hmm. And what Rob Arthur found is that the balls look like they did 2 years ago, where they're just not decelerating as much on the way to the plate, which means they're not decelerating as much when they're hit. Now, that should, projecting this, you know, affect breaking balls, right? Breaking balls are entirely about air resistance. This is the strangest conversation for sports radio. I love your show, guys. But the entire principle of a breaking ball is that you're creating air resistance that forces the ball in a certain direction. You spin it one way, it goes down. You spin it this way, it goes left, right, whatever have you. And if the baseballs have less drag on just your average fastball, they're going to have less drag on everything else. So this seems to, I mean, if you're just projecting here, this should affect pitchers who rely on movement more than it affects pitchers that rely on velocity. And of course, Hendricks is going to be at the top of any list. And really, this entire Cubs rotation is going to be at the top of any list of pitchers that really relies on movement as opposed to velocity, as opposed to power. So the more pitchers you have that need to spin the ball, the more pitchers you have that need to get strikes out of the zone, the worse you're going to do with the current crop of baseballs. And of course, the question is, how many baseballs are like this? Major League Baseball has absolutely no control over this process. I mean, they have, you know, they pay the people who manufacture the baseballs. I think they actually bought the factory at some point a couple of years ago.
You're right.
But they really don't exercise a lot of control over this. The range of usable baseballs is really, really wide. So it's almost a guessing game at this point. What will the baseballs be like in 2019? Let's tell them, Johnny. I think eventually baseball is going to have to narrow the range of acceptability for things like drag coefficient and gain a greater level of control over the production of the baseballs.
Are the umpires still rubbing down all of the pregame baseballs with that mud from the bottom of the Delaware River?
As I understand it, they don't anymore. The balls come like pre-tacky. So they don't have to actually go through that process anymore. I could be wrong about that, but I thought I saw where the baseballs are actually being produced in a way that they're already kind of, you know, tacky when they arrive.
I think Joey Gallo and Nomar Mazara have a different procedure for that. Yeah. I'm wondering, Joe, if you go to the south side here, Tim Anderson is off to a blistering start through seven games. Watching him his first couple of years, I always figured he could get streaky because of how swingy he is. But is there anything meaningful in these first couple of weeks if we're changing what small sample size is? Or is this just a dude who swings a lot who's kind of hot right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, the strikeout rate's down. He's only whiffed four times, and he's the type of player that, you know, if the strikeout rate drops, the things he does when he makes contact, he hits the ball hard, When he hits the ball hard, he can run. I mean, he's always had that ability. And, you know, he kind of is always, he looks like Dunstan Light, right? Yeah. I mean, this, he's never going to walk, but if he can get the bat to the ball, he can probably hit 300. I'm going to guess, and this is, I don't want to get too stat heavy here too, I don't think he can hit 517. That's probably not going to be a little bit outside his range. But I was pumping up Anderson. I think he was my guy in Sports Illustrated last year for these reasons. You know, he's a good defensive shortstop. He has collected a lot of at-bats. So the combination of experience and still being young enough to have the physical skills can be powerful. If you told me that he had, thinking of another Anderson here, like Garrett Anderson, I mean, there are some similarities in terms of like their approach at the plate. You know, Anderson ended up having a really good peak for about 3 years. He ended up hitting about 300, 310. A lot of the power came through. And, of course, he was a corner outfielder. So if you tell me Tim Anderson can hit 290, 320, 450, and steal 25 bases with a good percentage and play a average to plus shortstop, that's a very good player. And that's the thing you get when you kind of commit to one of these guys who, even if he doesn't walk a lot, he does everything else. Could he have, you know, an Adam Jones peak at shortstop, maybe with 10 fewer home runs? I mean, that's a really good player. And I think that, you know, you kind of hear a stat hit saying, you know, Tim Anderson's a good player. Well, he doesn't walk. Walks are just one part of being a good player. Plate discipline matters, but you can be a good baseball player without having great plate discipline.
White Sox rookie outfield sensation Eloy Jimenez has come to the plate 38 times in the major leagues. He has 9 hits. They are all singles. That's another way of saying his batting average, the same as his slugging percentage, and his isolated power is 0-0-0. I've watched some of these at-bats, and a couple times it looks like he's had some good swings and a good plan. Where's the pop?
It's coming. And again, this is the thing where, you know, in 40-something at-bats, I'm not going to worry about it, especially since, what's the average temperature at White Sox games so far? 14, 15 degrees?
Yeah, maybe a little higher, but just.
Slightly higher. Obviously, he's not hitting the ball in the air yet. I mean, he's only hit a handful of fly balls. He's not going to be that hitter. We know from his minor league track record, he gets the ball in the air. He's not going to sustain a 60% ground ball rate. So I would just say just give it time. And, you know, give it time for the weather to warm up as well.
Hey, Joe, before we let you go here, I'm just seeing some news out of Cleveland. Zach Meisel is reporting that it's actually Terry Francona said that Mike Clevinger is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks before he even picks up a baseball. That team is controlling the AL Central, probably, but they could use a guy like Dallas Keuchel or maybe even Craig Kimbrel, except ownership has promised that they're not spending any money. Thanks, and tell your story walking. This is going to be a point of contention, I would imagine, between ownership, Major League Baseball, and players, yes?
Yeah, well, this is another team that doesn't really have a lot of internal depth. And, of course, they're building their roster around just 7 good players. So when one of them goes out, you know, with Lindor also being out, it's a big deal. But as far as the money, yeah, I have no sympathy for sports owners. If you're rich enough to own the team, you're rich enough to buy the players. That's really what it comes down to. So Charles, whichever Dolan brother it was who came out the other day and said, oh, you know, we're never going to compete for a $300 million player, It's just nonsense, especially when you're getting so much value from, you know, having Carrasco and Ramirez and Lindor at these ridiculously below market prices. So, yeah, I mean, maybe this causes them to go out and sign a Keuchel. I think it helps them more if Keuchel can play left field for them, because their outfield's a joke. But, yeah, obviously this is bad news. When you only have 6 or 7 good players, one of them going out for 8 weeks is pretty bad.
Lastly, before we let you go, the Cubs are in sort of a weird place with weather, looking at a bad weather day tomorrow. And I know there was probably some thought given, and we know there's increased flexibility with the idea of, instead of postponing a game, actually moving it up when you have the opportunity, maybe a full day, maybe even now that we can be in contact with fans via text messaging and phone applications, of starting games a little bit earlier to take advantage of weather windows. I know Len Casper has floated that idea before. We've seen golf tournaments have done that and say, look, we were supposed to start at 1, we're going to start at 11, and that way you can have the full game uninterrupted by weather. Have you ever thought about that, looked at some of the possibilities, positives, negatives, of having a more flexible schedule in both directions?
I think it ticks off, man. I think it's easier to do in a place where there's not a lot of demand to begin with. If your walk-up, you're not going to have much of a walk-up on a weekday in April anyway, so I don't think you're affecting, you're ticking off your season ticket holders, but a lot of them are going to blow off the 30-degree game in April anyway. So I think in a situation like this, where it's going to be bad weather anyway, you would solve the problem on the side of getting the game in versus ticking off some fans, especially if you also provide an option that says, look, if you don't make the game, we'll give you a makeup at some point. We'll give you an extra ticket. Now, that's harder for the Cubs than it is, say, for the Tigers or somebody. But I think that getting the game in and avoiding those later season doubleheaders is a virtue, even if you've got to tick off some fans.
Makes sense. Joe Sheehan, thanks as always.
Thanks, folks.
That is Joe Sheehan. He of SI and Baseball America and the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We are seeing the midday midway already upon us. And I've got an odd situation for walkers, joggers, runners in the Miami area encountering some frightening things because of something that is native to Miami that is not elsewhere. I also have a bad way to go. It was a man after my own heart doing something that is a spring and summer favorite thing for me to do, but he did it poorly.
We're going to talk baseball and international relations. We're also going to talk a brand new piece of technology that's got me very interested in perhaps jumping the pond. Midday Midway's on the way. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
it. The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Time for the Midday Midway. So far on this show, we talked about the injury to John Lester, the performance of the Cubs yesterday, the war of words, the semantic stuff that is ongoing. I wouldn't call it a war of words, it's hyperbolic. But just the way that both Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein are managing urgency, mindfulness, awareness of the day, attacking the day.
Kind of feel like a war of words. The best way to have one is through hyperbole, though.
Yeah,
I think we're doing it right if we're having it through that way.
I think so, too. It's just, right. But I don't want to make it seem like something it's not. I don't think there's any ill will involved. There's just a continual massaging of the message amid the 3-7 start. And we talk baseball with Joe Sheehan. Midday Midway is brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.99 every day. Subway, make it what you want. At participating restaurants, additional charge for extras, applicable tax, no additional discounts, coupons may be applied.
So a couple of months ago, I gave you a real cool story in the midday, and I hate that I've got to follow it up like this.
Why?
I think you remember that the White House, an Obama-era ruling was made to allow Cuban baseball players to sign with major league teams in the United States. Remember this from a handful of months ago, almost a full year ago.
To make it much more like the Pacific Rim, where there's a posting fee, it's above board, and there's no human trafficking involved.
And the incident, what brings politics into this, or the White House into this, is it's their call as to whether or not players from Cuba have to defect to another country and gain citizenship. I can't remember if it's citizenship or some sort of residency. I think it's just residency in another country before they move into the Office of Foreign Asset Management and therefore Major League Baseball. The White House is undercutting that agreement between Cuban baseball players, Major League Baseball, Cuba, and the United States.
Why?
They are rescinding that decision. The administration has discretion to decide whether the Cuban Baseball Federation is too closely aligned with that country's sports ministry to allow independent agreements involving players. The White House has worked to pull back from the closer ties to Cuba that were established during Obama's tenure. Major League Baseball has been informed of the dangers of dealing with Cuba, the senior administration official said.
Who benefits now from this?
I'm not entirely sure, and the statement from the White House doesn't seem to put that in front of anything. There is an economic embargo on the country, and that prohibits Americans from doing business with the Cuban government. Now, though, as it seems, baseball is not going to be able to sign Cuban players straight out of the Cuban National League.
Well, all that does is empower the human traffickers and the Mexican smuggling operation.
It seems like that to me. And if that's maybe not the focus, maybe those 70-some people aren't the focus of the White House. Maybe they're focused on something larger than that. I couldn't really tell you. James Williams, who runs the group Engage Cuba, it's a group that promotes closer ties between the United States and the island, he said the MLB and their deal with Cuba solved a horrible human trafficking problem. By breaking that deal, the White House now owns this and exposes Cuban players to human rights abuses. I don't know whether guys like Jose Abreu are going to comment on something like this. They have spoken about their journeys over here prior.
Let's hear from Puig.
They were many of them. Yeah, Puig and Abreu. I'm forgetting one other prominent Cuban baseball player that also spoke out when these rules were rescinded and made closer Major League Baseball and the Cuban National League. But really happy about it. I would imagine some of those guys are reached for comment over the next couple of days, and I don't think that they'll be happy with it.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have clinched their third straight Central Division title. It'll be there Saturday and Sunday for the final regular season games. For tickets or playoff information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. An Arizona man died Sunday after being attacked by a swarm of bees at his home.
What the am I doing? I'm covered in bees!
The incident happened just before 6:30 p.m. when authorities received a report a man was being stung by multiple bees at his home in Yuma. The Yuma County Sheriff's Office wrote in a post, the man, identified as 51-year-old Epigmenio Gonzalez, was attempting to remove a beehive from a couch in his backyard.
Okay. Okay.
But
okay.
When he became when the insects became agitated and started to sting him.
Bees! Bees! God, they're huge! They're ripping my flesh off!
Your weapons are useless against them.
He ran to his front yard, where he was located by deputies and Rural Metro, covered with bees. They had to spray Gonzalez with water in order to scatter the bees and allow first responders to remove him from the scene.
Oh, man.
He was transported to Yuma Regional Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead.
Are they just normal bees?
A woman at the home also sustained multiple stings and had to be transported to the hospital. Her condition has not yet been released by officials. Now, here's the thing. You know, I love, love, love eradicating wasp nests and hornet's nests.
When we watched that video of the drone destroying the hornet, the look came over your face. That was altogether terrifying and really impressive at the same time.
Yeah, wasp and hornet nest destruction porn.
It was like watching another man watch porn. It was very weird for me.
That's what it
was. Like the last tab?
Yeah, but it is. We know that they're, depending on where the queen is and what bees will do to defend a queen, bees are different. Bees are, and they can only sting once. Think about that. That they sting you and they die.
Do they know that? I've always wondered that. I've actually, truly, honestly wondered that about bees.
Well,
do you think they know that? You think they got one shot in the pistol and then they're done?
I don't think they know.
I don't think they'd sting if they knew that.
I think that would be a bad adaptation for them to be aware of.
Right?
Well, not for this.
Think about like Larry the Bee. He stings you and it's like, I got him. What is this?
This sucks.
I am dead.
But I, as much as I enjoy doing, if you see an actual beehive, like a hive thing, like in your couch that you have outside,
in the backyard,
I definitely would suggest calling professionals. This isn't just like a paper wasp nest hanging in the eaves or the yellow jackets thing that is maybe dug in outside your house. Just I do as much fun as I have with these things myself. Exercise some degree of caution.
So there's a new slice of technology out there that may make our trip, the next Scorehouse trip, a whole lot easier.
Oh.
A space plane.
Is it the Jaunt?
No. That flies 25 times faster than the speed of sound has passed a testing milestone.
Whoa.
The hypersonic plane is so fast, it could jet from London to New York in fewer than 60 minutes and transport you from the UK to Australia in 4 hours. Oxford-based Reaction Engines have been working with the European Space Agency and the UK Space Agency, along with Bay Systems, not sure what that stands for, to make the powerful aircraft. This thing is an absolute beast. It flies in space. I mean,
it doesn't orbit.
No, it doesn't orbit, but it heads up there like one of the X planes, right? That broke the sound. I mean, it is up there. It is in the whatever sphere.
Ionosphere, right?
That thing is at the very top. Yeah. I mean, this is sweet, sweet stuff. It's being designed, the engines, to draw oxygen into the engine to use for combustion from takeoff until it reaches over 4,000 miles per hour After that point, the engine needs to burn liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen from onboard fuel tanks, which means, you know, potential explosions and whatnot. But if we need to get to and from Scorehouse in about 60 minutes when, you know, they head over to London, which I'm sure is the next Scorehouse.
Gotta do Scorehouse London.
That's back and forth.
Gotta do
that's
it.
Real easy trips. Jimmy and Mitch can just jet back and forth on a space plane. Easy.
Miami is a different kind of place. We know Florida's weird, but the Miami Herald is reporting on something that is an increasing problem. In other cities, joggers have to avert dog poop and, you know, red-winged blackbirds and things that bother you. Pick up after your dogs. In Miami, they are currently stepping around animal carcasses and various anatomical parts, a severed tongue, a bag with dead bleeding chickens in it.
Pick up after your deranged serial killers.
And the reason is offerings from Santeria worshipers.
I got no crystal ball.
Dead chickens, roosters, pigeons, goats, pigs, all atop Tropical Park Hill. One guy said, I found a bag with rooster's feet sticking out of it and plastic containers full of blood.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, Santeria is still being widely practiced, an Afro-Cuban religion. It's called the Way of the Saints. It originated with the Yoruba people of Western Africa,
sure,
who combined their faith with Roman Catholicism that they were forced to practice as slaves working on sugar plantations in Cuba. So the tenet of the religion is that you petition deities known as orishas, representing archetypical forces of nature. These are living spirits that must eat. So a watermelon in Biscayne Bay is an offering to Yamaya, goddess of the sea. Cucumbers floating down the Miami River, food for Ochun. You can visit the giant ceiba tree at the Bay of Pigs Memorial. You'll find red roosters for Chango, god of fire, lightning, dancing, virility, and leadership. This may also explain Nomar Mazara and Joey Gallo, perhaps. White chickens or yucca for Obatala, the goddess of peace and creation. Goat's legs, pig's heads, bananas, mangoes in hopes for justice or revenge. This is 21st century Miami, and it is still everywhere, and people have to work around these things regularly.
Are they subverting law? Like, do they have to do these sacrifices outside the rule of law?
Now, that is a great question.
Are they allowed to do this? I mean, the Constitution protects religious freedom.
Yes, apparently yes. This is considered protected expression. And in 1993, it's because the Supreme Court sided with Santero Ernesto Pichardo.
Well, they should have.
The co-founder of the first incorporated Santeria Church ruled that Hialeah's ban on Santeria ritual animal sacrifices was indeed religious discrimination. So they're doing this in public places, not private places, public places. But again, clean up after yourself.
Maybe just a little bit, yeah. We can stay in Florida for this. It's a Florida man story, though not the typical one. A Florida Keys man who bought an $8 million island off Key West this month was arrested over the weekend. Police said he schemed to rip off Kmart of $300 in household goods. Let me just run this back for you. Andrew Francis Lippi bought an island and then robbed Kmart for about $300 worth of stuff.
Not Father Francisco Lippi.
No, different guy. Okay. A week before the arrest, he bought the well-known Thompson Island, the home to the Knight family for 70 years, and most recently philanthropist Edward B. Knight.
Philanthropist.
What did I say?
Philanthropist.
Yeah, that one. Lippi said his family would live in the estate for a while. Lippi also owns the Real World House on Key Haven, just north of Key West.
Okay.
Now, he ripped off $300 worth of stuff from a Kmart. What does a multi-millionaire, if not a billionaire, steal from Kmart? Your price is $301.
Okay. Is it one thing?
It is not one thing. It is an assortment of things. Just kind of random stuff that you'd make a run for when you're out of some stuff.
Underpants.
At the island. No. He needed a Keurig coffee maker.
Oh, well, yes.
A Hamilton Beach coffee maker, you know, just to see which one was better. 8 light bulbs and a bed skirt. $300.
A bed skirt? That's not a necessity. This bed is unskirted.
It has to be. How dare this bed?
I can't sleep in an unskirted bed.
2 coffee makers, a couple of light bulbs, and a bed skirt.
All right. That is the Midday Midway, and we had an incident yesterday in the Cubs radio booth. And it wasn't just a Zach Zaidman Freudian slip.
That happens.
Yeah, we had something. Somebody Rick camped something.
Oh no! Is everything okay?
I hope so.
Right.
I hope everything is okay.
Sometimes blowouts get squirrely.
There were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. That's coming up next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It was a solid open to Friday's show, though. Whoa! No!
That was several years ago, the breaking of a chair live and on these airwaves.
Best way to break one, live.
It has happened. With the chair-breaking stories affiliated with Sports Radio 670 The Score, our Legion, and Rick, you blew one out a while back,
in Mitch's office.
That's right.
Yep.
That's
right.
So it was one of those, like, it was a wood chair, and I was trying to crack my back because I just wasn't comfortable, and something cracked.
Well,
and it wasn't my back.
It wasn't your back. It was the chair. And we go back to Super Bowl 30, and Dan Jiggetts, then of The Score, who on the same trip broke an airplane seat.
I think so. Yeah,
that nearly killed Terry when it shot a metal bolt all the way down the aisle and would have killed somebody. It would have. It was pretty explosive. And then on the same trip at a movie theater, it went right through one.
This chair is faulty.
I broke a chair at a family party, and like just a leg broke, and it took me about 15 seconds for the break to happen for me to hit the ground. It was just slow motion of falling backwards. And I couldn't do anything to stop it.
You just sort of knew I gotta own this one.
Here it goes.
Yeah.
I fell over in front of all of my coworkers and my bosses, so I don't really. I can't relate. I don't.
Nice of the guy to bring it up at the remote yesterday, by the way.
Had nothing to do with a chair. Yo, yeah, that guy with his custom jersey.
Hey, Tanner, I'm going to get you a walker next time you smoke the doobie.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. All right. Yeah, get me that walker.
Well, let's. How do you want me to lead into this? Just take you into Cubs baseball.
There was a major equipment transaction in our booth between innings.
Woo!
Ron Coomer has a brand new chair. Now, what happened to the other one?
Well, we had some issues. It wasn't moving real well. You know, they're on rollers. There was like a couple innings in a row. I'm like, why isn't it moving? It's tough when it's supposed to be four wheels and you only have three.
Oh, yeah, just like that. Like in the shopping center when you have the cart.
Yeah, the bad cart.
Swinging a bouncer toward Rizzo. Rizzo down on one knee, shovels, underhand feed to Brock on the bag, and that's out number one. And you try to push it, and you just keep going around in circles for, 20, 25 minutes. Kind of a waste of time.
25 minutes. I'm guessing you don't go to the grocery store then too often, do you?
Not anymore. One away. Here is Jung Ho Gung. But well, you got a new chair.
I got a new chair. Dave Miska hooked me up with a new chair.
Yeah,
I don't know who's standing in the hallway, but that's their problem right now.
You mean they were sitting earlier and now they're standing?
That very well could be, but right now we got a ball game and I'm sitting in a nice new chair.
There you go. You don't want to lose
Dave
a wheel. You don't want to blow one out there.
He's got a hamstring for Lester and a chair for Coombe.
Yeah.
A lot going on. Like flies.
A lot going on yesterday. And it was a sweater game. Did you hear that? He's a sweater. They should do that. Like, if in fact. If you know that there is a really hideously ugly Coogee sweater, let's call it what it is.
Just
and
horrendous.
I don't know if it is parallel evolution between the sweater that hangs on the back of the door in Mitch's office.
Has to be.
The one that Jay Zawoski used for The Score house open. And it also so happens that Pat Hughes has a similar sweater that it was recently dry cleaned. Every 2 years it's dry cleaned. It is kept in the radio booth at Wrigley Field for him to don on when days get cold, when the wind turns, and you have to, in case of emergency, break glass. And it was a sweater day.
It's a glorious sweater.
It is in its own right. Yes,
it is. Something to behold.
Hey. Ron Coomer has a brand new chair. Now, what happened to the other one?
Well,
That was actually, it was a, not a big Motown hit after Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, but Ron Coomer's Got a Brand New Chair had a brief run. It was danceable. I believe it was on American Bandstand, and everybody just stood around and kind of looked at each other.
It was a representative effort. Seemed it was nice.
Sort of a paint-by-numbers version. Sort of the funky Cold Medina to the Wild thing.
It needed to happen, but we didn't need it. I think that's kind of the A and B side of those. Meanwhile, three things hit me about that Cubs-Pirates game yesterday, and one of them got brought up here in the broadcast. Jung Ho Kang was batting. Why?
Yeah, you yelled out, you're a terrible person.
Why is he allowed back in Major League Baseball? Who's like, we're looking for a guy who can play infield, hit for a little bit of power, and is very drinky while he's driving.
And might be a rapist.
Might be that, too. Just come on through. Major League Baseball, come on through. You have a job. Everything's going to be just fine because the Pirates don't want to pay anybody anything. Yeah, that probably shouldn't be happening anymore.
Why is that not a big deal? Why are we not taking more seriously the fact that Jung Ho Kang, this is more than just some little allegation.
Oh yeah, and it's multiple. It's a thing. He's got a whole rap sheet, and it's. I know that Rob Biertemple, who's the beat writer for the Pirates on The Athletic, wrote up a long, long piece on why and how the Pirates decided to bring him back. It didn't. I mean, they didn't answer a lot of questions in the piece. The Pirates, Rob's piece was great, but my God, that I don't know why we're doing that. And then you've got the Javi Baez moment, where he throws a bat at a curveball low and away. We saw it happen live. We were there, and he just throws the
off the bounce.
I've never seen anything like that live, and I've watched a good amount. I would watch as Todd Frazier would kind of be. The bat would be out of his hands as he's reaching for something outside and just kind of poke it out to the right side, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this I've not seen anything like live. But have you seen, we'll retweet it from the Bernstein_MCK account, the Bernstein McKnight Twitter handle, the side-by-side of Vlad Guerrero Sr. and Javi Baez yesterday. It's identical.
It's crazy.
It's unbelievable how it's the same pitch. The bat leaves the hands in a slightly different manner.
But where the trajectory of the ball, the reaction of the shortstop,
identical.
The fact that it's a right-handed pitcher,
identical.
Even the uniform, the dark shirt and the light pants, everything lines up. It's amazing. And Guerrero said, aparentemente el mago descubrió el truco para batear de esa manera. Looks like El Mago learned the trick of how to hit that way, too.
That's what I got.
Crying, laughing emoji, double goggle eye emoji. That is a cool baseball thing.
It really is. That's that game. God, it's so good. And in his, man, Javi Baez is tough to strike out. It doesn't matter if he's 0-2.
Wait. What did you just say?
He's tough to walk. Sorry. He's tough to walk. He'll swing at everything. But 0-2 doesn't matter for him. Nothing
matters.
0-2 doesn't matter. You could be up there throwing, I got a Javi Baez 0-2. He's swinging at everything and he can hit just about anything.
This segment brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you at newmailmedical.com. Eli Hershkovich is going to tell us about what was really an exciting finish to an exciting and much-watched NCAA tournament. Mm. This one was a thing, and it gave us a little something to go away with. We'll find out what it meant, what the legacy may be, and his thoughts on whether or not we have a just champion because of everything that was involved.
That's next. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.